And welcome back in to GameDaySportsRadio.com. Boji Wood with you this Friday morning, talking college football with Mike Menard from OTM Sports, of course, right here on Inside the Numbers. Mike, let's move on to another SEC contest. It's the ESPN primetime game, or 6 p.m. game. Eastern, it'll be a 5 p.m. local kick there in Starkville, Mississippi. It's the Gators going to number 23, Mississippi State. The Bulldogs, they dropped 9 slots in the poll after losing to Kentucky last week. The big thing about this matchup, though, it's Mullen Bowl 1. Dan Mullen returns to Starkville for the first time since just leaving about 9 months ago or so. This is the first meeting between these two teams since 2010. So it's just kind of Mullen's bad luck that his first year he's got to go back, because, of course, they're not crossover opponents. And so, you know, they don't play, or they're crossover opponents, but they're not the designated crossover opponents, like Alabama has Tennessee, Auburn has Georgia. This is Mississippi State and Florida. They only play once. I think the way it works out now, they play twice every 8 years or something like that. Last time that these two teams played, though, the Bulldogs won the game 10-7 in Gainesville in 2010.
Yeah, this game, Coach, very surprising numbers. State opened 8.5 or 9. They're now down to 7 or 7.5, and I'll get to that in a moment. But when we look at, take the point spread out of the equation, Mississippi State laid an egg in Lexington. They lost by 21 points as a 9-point favorite. Gators, they continued their dominance over Tennessee. They blasted them 47-21. They own Tennessee. The key to this game is, as is the key in most games, is who's going to run it and which team's going to stop the run, because the Bulldogs had a woeful 56 yards rushing in that loss to Kentucky.
They did, but, you know, I really think that game said more about Kentucky than Mississippi State. I mean, Nick Fitzgerald, he was bottled up in a way that really I'd never seen before. I mean, he's had more success against Alabama and Georgia defenses than he had against that Kentucky defense. You know, again, I don't want to dismiss Mississippi State simply based upon their performance last week in Lexington, because, you know, I think this Kentucky team is pretty good.
Yeah, Coach, and the point spread, being what it is, it agrees with that, because that's the one thing that I shook my head. I was like, okay, well, then this should be 6 to 7 points. Instead of it opened 8.5 to 9, but it would lend to your point there that was more of a vote of confidence for Kentucky, and it was more of them playing great than it was Mississippi State being a poor team.
Right. As far as any trends right now, what are we looking at?
Okay, I won't go into the head-to-head trends because, as you said, they haven't met in 8 years and they don't play often. The Gators, they win and cover in Knoxville. That was their first cover out of 7 straight conference games. The point spread tells us the Bulldogs win and most likely cover again, because it should have been 6.5 or 7, but it opened 8.5 or 9. So the point spread says take the Bulldogs minus the points, but I don't think I will.
Yeah, and we were talking about Kentucky. They went from unranked up to number 17 with that win over Mississippi State. And Mississippi State was ranked, I believe, either 13 or 14 at the time. And so, again, Kentucky got a lot of credit for that win, because, I think that game probably said more about the Wildcats good than bad about Mississippi State and the Bulldogs. South Carolina, though, they're unranked. They're 2-1. They were Georgia owned them. Okay. Now, Mark Stoops has Kentucky off to a 4-0 start for the first time. Again, as I mentioned, unranked to number 17. But at the same time, even though they're ranked, they still don't seem to get, you know, the level of respect that they probably deserve.
They really don't. And, well, one thing is, as we've seen in the past, where Kentucky will get off to a good start, and then they fall back to being Kentucky football. I'm not so sure we're going to see that this year, but I'll tell you this. That South Carolina team, they have the one loss to Georgia. But remember how that game started, and it almost created a snowball effect where South Carolina just couldn't come back because the game started with a pick six.
Yeah, it did. And South Carolina comes back, and they go to Vandy and win. And, again, I know Vandy was not – they had nothing left in the tank after – going up to South Bend and should have won up there, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but they should have won that game in South Bend. And again, they came back and played with no emotion, really no enthusiasm whatsoever. So I do give South Carolina credit for winning in Nashville.
Yeah, and the odds makers had South Carolina as a 1 or 2 point favorite, and they won the game 37-14, so it wasn't a squeaker. Kentucky defense, in my opinion, Coach, from a handicapper standpoint, they look for real. They're only allowing 13 points per game. And I think there's been a definite culture change in Lexington.
Yeah, any time that you have a culture change, and I know that the offense is, sells the tickets. And frankly, as an old defensive coach, I'll say this, grumpy old man, whatever you want to call me, that the rules in college football today, and the NFL for that matter, are designed to allow success for the offense. And so I understand the offensive culture, but if you're going to change the culture of a program, it starts with the defense. And the Stoops name, of course, it's synonymous with defense over the last 20 years in college football, because when you make a culture change, it starts with physicality. That's what it starts with. And it helps you defensively, but the one thing it does, it helps you run the football. Now, of course, again, Stoops' name, defense, but guess what? 4 out of the 5 games Mark Stoops has played South Carolina since he's been at Kentucky, the Wildcats have rushed for 200-plus yards against the Gamecocks. And guess what? The 4 that they ran for over 200 yards were the last 4 they played, and Kentucky won all 4 of them.
Yeah, they've owned the series. They've won 4 years in a row straight up, and of course, they covered all 4 of those. Plus, they've covered 5 straight over South Carolina, so they seem to have their number. In this game, Kentucky is actually, South Carolina opened as a 1-point favorite, just as they did over Vanderbilt, but this time, the public and the sharps have bet Kentucky, so now Kentucky's a small favorite. Coach, from 07 through 14, these teams played 8 times, and all 8 went over the total. They were high scoring. The last 3 meetings, though, stayed under, reversing that trend. So this game's a tough one to pick. In past years, Kentucky wasn't favored. They weren't expected to win. This year they are favored, and the pressure is on them, and we'll see how they handle it.
We'll see if Mark Stoops can get the Wildcats up to win 5 straight versus South Carolina. And if you know that Kentucky program and the history of that Kentucky program, beating any school 5 straight years is an accomplishment, so we'll see how that works out. The ABC primetime game, this is the top 10 matchup, the one that will have severe ramifications as far as the playoffs goes, and that's number 4 Ohio State traveling to Happy Valley to take on the number 9 Nittany Lions. Of course, both these teams coming in undefeated. James Franklin, he continues to defy the odds. He worked miracles in Nashville at Vandy, resurrected that program. He's done the exact same thing at Penn State. Of course, Buckeyes are happy to have Urban Meyer back on the sideline, but guess what? Urban Meyer can't play defensive end, and Nick DeBosa, the best defensive end in the nation, looks like he's going to be out quite some time, maybe even to November, because he had to have his abdomen muscle have surgery on that.
Yeah, Bosa being out, that's a big issue. Before I go into talking about skill positions versus defensive lineman, Coach, I think – I want to get your thought on this. James Franklin, you mentioned how he defied the odds getting Vanderbilt's program rising to a certain level. I think what he's done at Penn State has been even more challenging and more impressive because remember that climate that he was in when he first got there.
Yeah, because Bill O'Brien, you know, let's say this. Bill O'Brien, he went in and he laid the foundation. He came in and took the hard shots. And you have to give him credit for the way that he handled that before he left and went back to the NFL, to the Houston Texans. And I know from firsthand testimony that having to go in and lay the foundation and really not lay the foundation, he had to dig out of a hole, Bill O'Brien did. And it took a lot out of him emotionally. He was drained. And so I have to give credit for Bill O'Brien to calm in the water, so to speak. But Penn State was still not good. There's still the stigma of the Sandusky scandal. He has come in. He has – the big thing that he has done that Bill Bryant couldn't do is he has upgraded their recruiting. He has gotten their recruiting back to where it was. And, again, I said Bill O'Brien couldn't do it. It wasn't that he's not capable of doing it, but that time, if you were a top recruit, there was so much uncertainty at Penn State, you wasn't going to get those guys. Now – guess what? James Franklin has come back in, and he has given that program stability, and now they're getting those guys again, and that's why they're ranked number 9 in the nation this year.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to give Franklin credit for what Bill O'Brien did because he had the toughest job, but still remember, right when during that time, the Penn State players were out allowed to leave with no rules,
right?
They could leave, and you can't rebuild a program that quickly. But no, both coaches there deserve credit. But I still think a lot of people forget. They see Penn State dominating and winning all these games, and they forget where they were just a few short years ago.
Oh, no doubt about that. And James Franklin, again, a Pennsylvania native, a graduate of Shippensburg College there in Pennsylvania, or Shippensburg University now, but he gets there to Happy Valley, and I look for him to be at Penn State really for the rest of his career.
Well, a lot of Penn State fans would like that, especially if he continues to have this success. Sorry for getting off track there, Coach. Right. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. But when you talked about Bosa being out maybe until November, Coach, we talk about this often. Most people, they focus on skill positions, but you and I, we focus on offensive and defensive lines as much, if not more, than skill positions. Case in point, I know I'm skipping to the NFL here, but Tom Brady, he didn't have protection each of the last two games, and both of them resulted in blowout losses. But this game, both quarterbacks in this Big Ten battle, they're athletic, and it's going to come down to, in my opinion, it's going to come down to who can pressure the quarterback and take them out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tom Brady and the lack of productivity he's had the last couple of weeks. And, again, and that's not because all of a sudden that Tom Brady became a bad quarterback or anything like that. What that is that's game planning. That is defensive game planning. And especially in college, it can have more of an effect than it does in the NFL because your quarterbacks are more mobile. What defensive coordinators try to do, they analyze that film and they analyze that quarterback's habits. And let's just take, for instance, let's just say that he's a right-handed quarterback and he is great going to his right, going to his dominant hand. Well, what they will do, defensive coordinators, will try to overload that dominant hand side, get pressure, force him to go away from, as you said, get out of his comfort zone. Or say you've got a quarterback that loves his check down routes. He'll look at his progression, and if his first receiver is not there, then all of a sudden he's just going to check down and he's going to get the ball out of his hands. And yeah, it may not be but a 1 or 2 yard gain or even a no gain, but he's got the ball out of his hands. He got it into an athlete's hands. Well, you've got a quarterback that does that. You want to take that away from him. Well, now all of a sudden, instead of playing soft on the check down routes, then you let your backers or corners, you can do all kinds of exotic coverages to jump on that check down route. Now all of a sudden he looks for his check down route and it's not there, or he lofts it out there and it's a pick six going back the other way. But the key is this, is now that quarterback doesn't have that quick check down route that he is so comfortable going to. Now he has to hold the ball. What does he do with it? Does he just heave one down the field? Because he's already come off of his number one progression. As soon as he got the number one progression receiver wasn't open, oh, I'm going check down. Oh, no, he's not there. Now all of a sudden he's probably sacked, or if he tries to run, he's going to get hit. Again, defensive coordinators take what that quarterback does best and what he's most comfortable with, and they want to take him out of it.
Yeah, and the thing about this game is both quarterbacks, they can throw it and they can run it. And that hasn't always been the case in this matchup. Usually one team has had a guy that can run it, another team had a guy that could run it and throw it. But both of these kids, these quarterbacks, McSorley and the kid from Ohio State, they're very athletic.
Yeah, and one thing that you, again, in kind of our pre-show production meetings and just kind of, you know, getting the games we're talking about, and of course we'll, you know, we'll just kind of throw comments off the top of our heads and everything. And one of the things that you told me that surprised me, that Penn State, they've been the best covering team in all of college football over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and they're 21-5-1 against the spread their last 27 games. That's regular season, home, road, bowl games. And unfortunately, who's the best team and road team in college football against the point spread? It's Ohio State. So these two teams are playing each other. The Bucks are a great road team. Penn State's been a covering machine for 2+ years. Illinois, here's the final. If I have to make a pick on this play, this is what I'm going to go with. Illinois ran for 245. Pitt ran for 245 on Penn State. So that lends me to believe the Buckeyes will be able to run the ball, control the line of scrimmage, and win the game. But again, they're laying 3.5 points. But if I had to make a play, I'm going to look for Ohio State to win on the money line.
And again, you know, earlier coming into talking about this game, you know, I mentioned this has the biggest ramifications for the playoffs. You know, actually, there's another top 10 matchup, Stanford and Notre Dame, and we'll get to that game when we come right back after this quick break on Inside the Numbers.
Don't want no cloudy morning. Won't you hear what I'm saying?